Today, we the taxpayer save the inflation day. Or did we? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis, one that is post covering finance and property news. Well, superficially, headline and trimmed mean inflation are both finally back inside the Reserve Bank of Australia's target band, based on the latest data from the ABS. The annual CPI inflation was 2.4% in the March quarter, unchanged from the December quarter. The trimmed mean, which provides a better view of the underlying inflation by reducing the effect of irregular or temporary price changes, was at 2.9%, down from 3.3% in the December quarter. But some important points to make about this result. First, of course, it means that prices do continue to rise, but at a lower rate than through the inflationary spike that we've had over the last 3 years. The cumulative effect are that prices remain substantially higher relative to incomes. And CPI does not include costs of land or mortgage repayments, and only a weak proxy for housing costs. Second, the government's support for energy, particularly electricity, has pulled the inflation measure lower than it would have otherwise been. Actually, electricity prices rose 16.3% this quarter. That follows falls of 17.3% in September and 9.9% in the December quarter. That was due to the introduction of the second round of the Commonwealth Energy Bill Relief Fund, the EBRF, rebates from July 2024, which was expanded to include all households. The rise this quarter was expected, as most households in Brisbane have used up the $1,000 Queensland State Government electricity rebate, resulting in higher out-of-pocket electricity costs. Some households in the remaining states and territories also saw increases in the amounts payable on their electricity bills this quarter compared with the last quarter. That was due to the impact of the Commonwealth EBRF rebates being lower in the March quarter compared to the December quarter due to the timing of rebate payments. Households in some states and territories received catch-up payments to $75 installments in the December quarter compared to only one in this quarter. If you exclude the rebates, though, electricity prices would have risen by 0.4% in the March 2025 quarter. And despite the quarterly rise, electricity prices are down by 11.5% compared to 12 months ago. But the truth is, inflation would have been a lot higher if the government had not used taxpayer funds to subsidise electricity. And we see the impact of those subsidies rolling off, as at the end of the Queensland rebate. No wonder both major parties ahead of the election committed to continue the taxpayer payouts to households. All taxpayers are bearing the higher electricity costs via taxes on one hand, but are given back cash on the other, so it's a bit of a con, really. And in addition, the CPI weightings were revised this time around. The weighting for housing, which includes new dwelling costs and electricity, were adjusted down, meaning those elements had a lesser impact on the overall number. The ABS says the weight for the household group fell 0.35 percentage points due to a decrease in the weight for new dwellings purchased by owner-occupiers, down 0.48 percentage points, and electricity down 0.52 percentage points. Dwelling commencements in 2023-24 were the lowest in over 10 years, reflecting reduced spending on new dwelling construction and the purchase of new dwellings. The weight for electricity fell due to lower electricity costs after the introduction of the Commonwealth Energy Bill Relief rebates. The combination of those and various state rebates meant households spent less electricity. Those falls would have been larger if it had not been for the fact that the weight for rents increased 0.58 percentage points. With vacancy rates remaining at historic lows, the ABS says, rental prices increased by 6.4% in the 12 months to the December 24 quarter, but there were some differences across the capital cities, by the way. Looking at the detail in the quarterly data, the main contributors of the quarterly CPI rise of 0.9% was housing, up 1.7%, education, up 5.2%, and food and non-alcoholic beverages, up 1.2%. The quarterly growth in housing was driven by electricity, up 16.3%, and the rise was driven by those increases in electricity prices in Brisbane. Some households in the remaining states and territories also saw a rise in electricity bills this quarter, as I discussed. Education prices increased 5.2% this quarter following the start of the school year. Preschool and primary education rose 5.6% and secondary education rose 6.4%. That is due to higher operating costs being passed on as higher school fees. And tertiary education rose 3.6% due to the annual indexation of university course fees. The rise of 1.2% in food and non-alcoholic beverages was driven by fruit and vegetables, up 2.8%. Fruit and vegetables such as avocados, mangoes, asparagus, tomatoes and lettuce saw seasonal price rises following reduced supply. And non-discretionary inflation, which includes goods and services that households are less likely to reduce their consumption of, like food, automotive fuel, housing and health costs, rose 1.8% through the quarter and 2.3% across the year. The rise this quarter was driven by electricity up 16.3%, medical and hospital service up 2.7%, and secondary education up 6.4%. On the other hand, optional discretionary goods and services fell 0.2% through the quarter, but still rose 2.5% through the year. The fall this quarter was driven by international holiday travel and accommodation down 7.6%, furniture down 5.5%, and audiovisual and computing equipment down 2.4%. The annual services inflation eased to 3.7% in the March quarter, down from 4.3% in the December quarter, driven by lower price increases for rents and insurance. Annual goods inflation increased to 1.3% in the March quarter, up from 0.8% in the December quarter, largely due to electricity prices increasing in the March quarter. This is the lowest annual outcome for services inflation since the June 2022 quarter, reflecting easing in inflation across a broad range of services, including rents and insurance. Annual price growth continues to ease for both new dwellings and rents. New dwellings rose 1.4% for the 12 months to the March quarter, down from 2.9% in the December quarter. This is the weakest annual rise since the June 2021 quarter. The lowest annual price growth in new dwellings reflects project home builders increasing incentives and promotional offers to entice new business in a subdued new home market. Rental prices rose 5.5% over the 12 months to the March quarter, down from 6.4% in the December quarter. The easing in annual prices of rents reflected increased vacancy rates across most capital cities, and the rate of annual growth in rental prices was also moderated by changes to the Commonwealth Rent Assistance, the CRA. The maximum rate available for CRA increased by 10% on the 20th of September 2024, in addition to the usual biannual CPI indexation on the 20th of March and 20th of September each year. Those increases in CRA have reduced the amount of rent payable by eligible tenants. If you excluded the changes to CRA, rents would have increased by 6.8% over the 12 months to March, compared to 7.8% over the 12 months to the December 24 quarter. Annual food inflation increased slightly. Food prices rose 3.2% over the 12 months to the March quarter, up from 3% in the December quarter. Meat and seafood prices rose 4.3% compared to 12 months ago. That's the largest annual increase since the December 22 quarter. The rise in meat and seafood prices was driven by lamb and goat prices increasing by 19.7% in the past 12 months. Fruit and vegetable prices were up 6.6% and they continue to remain elevated. Fruit prices were up by 12.2% compared to March quarter of 24 due to higher prices for avocados, bananas and strawberries. Annual increases in education fees did remain elevated too compared to the pre-COVID-19 era. The education group, which covers primary, secondary and tertiary education, rose 5.2% in March quarter 25. The rise was driven by an increase in preschool and primary education up 5.6% and the secondary education up 6.4% as higher operating costs were passed through as higher fees. Tertiary education up 3.6% rose following the indexation of higher education course fees. Over the past 12 months, the group rose 5.7%. The transport group was up 1%. The main contributors to the rises were automotive fuels at 1.9%, spare parts and accessories for motor vehicles at 1.3%, and maintenance and repairs of motor vehicles up 0.7%. Urban transport fares rose 0.8%, driven by an annual indexation of Melbourne fares in January and the ending of some public transport initiatives by state and territory governments this quarter. Canberra's free public transport ended in November as the city transitioned to a new ticketing system, and Perth's summer of free public transport was in place for 1 month of the quarter, ending on the 5th of February. Initiatives that continued this quarter include Brisbane with the 50-cent fares, Darwin with free bus fares, Hobart with half-price fares, free Sunday travel in Perth, and fare-free Fridays in Canberra. Over the past 12 months, the group fell 1%. Automotive fuel was down 5.1%, motor vehicles were down 1.1%, and urban transport fares were 3.8% over the year. Health group was up 2.9%, with medical hospital service up 2.7% and pharmaceutical products up 5.3%, and they rose as a result of the cyclical reduction in the proportion of consumers who qualify for subsidies under the Medicare Safety Net and Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme. The safety net thresholds for both the PBS and Medicare were reset on the 1st of January each year. On 1 January 25, a freeze was introduced on the indexation of co-payments for PBS medicines. This, combined with price falls for some non-prescription pharmaceuticals, contributed to the softer quarterly price movements for pharmaceutical products seen this quarter compared to previous March quarters. And over the past 12 months, the group rose 4.1%. Medical and hospital services are up 4.9%. The Insurance and Financial Services Group was up 0.5%. Other financial services rose 0.5%, and they rose due to higher stamp duty charges. Insurance rose 0.6%, which was the weakest quarterly rise since the June 2020 quarter. Motor vehicle insurance was the main contributor to the slowing in insurance price growth, reflecting easing costs for spare parts and labour for motor vehicle repairs, as well as lower second-hand vehicle prices. Insurance, though, is still up 7.6% across the year. Households in Brisbane had the largest inflation uplift of 1.9% in the quarter due to the end of the Queensland electricity rebate. Here, over the quarter, electricity rose 341.4% due to most households using up the $1,000 Queensland state rebates. Medical and hospital services are up 3.2%. Automotive fuels were 3.2% higher. Rents are up 1.5%. International holiday and travel accommodation was down 9.2%. And so overall, Brisbane recorded an annual rise of 2.7%. For comparison, Sydney was up 0.9% over the quarter, with electricity up 11.8%, medical hospital service up 2.9%, secondary education up 6.4%, rents up 0.9%, international travel and holiday accommodation down 6.5%. But Sydney recorded an annual rise of 2.3%. And while Perth was up 0.5%, medical and hospital service were up 3%, secondary education was up 6.4% over the quarter. Automotive fuel was up 3.4%. Rents up 1.7%. Electricity down 27.6%. And Perth recorded an annual rise of 2.8%. So although the underlying rate of 2.9% was higher than analysts were expecting, of course there were calls for the RBA to cut when it meets on May the 19th and 20th. Markets are tipping it. Economists expect it. And corporate Australian households would probably welcome it. Bond traders are betting on a 25 basis point cut now. Earlier this month, though, they were pricing in a 50-50 chance of a jumbo cut after US President Donald Trump's sweeping tariffs threatened concerns about global growth. But the terminal rate and how quickly you get there is actually a battleground at the moment. The bond market, usually much more focused on inflation than growth, says we can do it in the coming year, but others are more cautious. To get to 2.85%, we will need a shock. The obvious one is a fallout from Donald Trump's tariffs, already wreaking havoc in the US and threatening to hit economic growth and fuel inflation while rewriting supply chains and trade routes globally. Economists have been telling us for weeks that Australia's economy would be relatively immune, though, with only around 4% of Australia's goods exports by value flowing to the US. So the direct impact of the tariffs on the broader economy would be limited, but perhaps those global shocks will tend to impact us more than we think via second-order impacts. So you can bet the RBA board will devote a fair chunk of its meeting to Trump. Even if the tariffs turn out to be just a bout of uncertainty and the worst of it washes over, that uncertainty alone will slacken activity, even for countries on the other side of the world, like Australia. So it begs the question, how many rate cuts will there be in the coming year? Well, State Street's global markets head of APAC macro strategy, Dyfor Evans, whose firm runs its own price monitoring data, says Australia hasn't toppled its inflation issue and thinks the RBA has been deliberately non-committal about cutting rates, and they think markets will have to wind back its pricing, that is, this spate of rate cuts, isn't coming in the foreseeable future. The disinflation story is not really there, Evans says. We're hovering around the midpoint of the inflation price target range, and if anything, a little higher than that per our price stats index. Evans says his data shows prices, excluding housing, are rising at a rate only slightly less than last year and materially above the 10-year average. Cities, SIED, is tipping rate cuts in May, August, September and November to get to 3.1% by the end of the year. And he says there's a risk that the labour market is too tight and the RBA will not cut so quickly. The central bank will receive April jobs market data just prior to the mid-May meeting. I think they're a reluctant cutter because they're not confident that productivity growth is going to accelerate from here, he said. If you don't have productivity growth increasing, there's a risk they would generate inflation. And Saad's comments are similar to those of JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley post the Wednesday inflation data. We'd argue a May rate cut followed by two or three more this year is forming a consensus view, but Westpac points out that if you look just over the past two quarters of trim mean inflation, analyze it, you get to 2.4%. RBA Governor Michelle Bullock has called for patience as policymakers assess how the new year's tariff regime will alter global supply and demand. And the central bank cut the cash rate back in February for the first time in nearly 5 years, but then paused last month, just one day before Trump's April the 2nd hefty tariff announcements. Andrew Lilly, chief rate strategist at Barrenjoey, said there was no pressure for the RBA to deliver back-to-back rate cuts because inflation was unlikely to undershoot. The most likely thing the RBA would do is cut in May, cut in August, and then sit back and wait, he said. Some pundits still question whether a rate cut in May is a sure thing. Perpetual's head of investment strategy, Matt Sherwood, says the not small inflation pulse from Saturday's federal election and the uncertainty of the trade war could hold the RBA back. Labour and the coalition have pledged cost of living relief measures, which will add to inflationary pressures and muddying the outlook is the prospect of a bigger global trade war that could impact inflation and trigger a global recession. The Aussie dollar held onto its gains and the yield on the policy-sensitive two-year bonds paired most of its easing decline earlier. And earlier in the day, by the way, President Donald Trump flagged the possibility of another call with Albanese to discuss US import levies. Trump imposed a broad 10% tariff on Australia in early April, and his comments are the first public indication of trade talks between the two countries in more than 2 months. More consequential for Australia, though, is the impact of US tariffs on the Chinese economy and how Chinese policymakers react, said Pradeep Philip, head of Deloitte Access Economics. Australian businesses and consumers haven't forgotten the lessons from the pandemic and will be worried about supply chain disruptions, which could see prices rise. So cutting to the chase, yeah, we probably will get a cut in May, but don't expect too many after that until things are a bit clearer. And in the meantime, let's celebrate the fact that it's actually taxpayers who've actually paved the way for the inflationary result that we got, which was down, and the likelihood of an interest rate cut. So you could say that Chalmers' strategy actually has worked, but actually that means that debt will be higher, which is going to cost taxpayers more in the long run. So I'm not sure we have one really, but there you go. That's politics for you. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.